This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit Progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
Well, our next guest, starting outfielder for the Red Sox and one of their great young players, and who grew up near Bend, Oregon, a place I'm very familiar with, which is one of the most, it's a hidden secret, Madras, Jacoby Ellsbury joining us in studio. It's the Herd on ESPN Radio. It's really interesting you're here because you went to Oregon State, and then you left, and then I think they won back-to-back national championships.
Back-to-back national championships,
yeah. So you grew up in a town that is one of my favorite in the country. That people out east have no idea how beautiful Bend, Oregon is. You grew up in this pristine, small, mountainous region. How did you become such a great baseball player? You went to a small high school. How did you get to the bigs?
You know, I think it started at a young age. My dad, he loved baseball, and he just made a tee for me and made a bat, and kind of just started there. So it just started in the backyard, you know, I'm sure similar to a lot of other guys.
Yeah, so you got drafted by Tampa Bay, then you eventually went to the Red Sox. So you look at this World Series, and you have the Yankees and the Red Sox. And, you know, when I look at New York, that batting lineup is so daunting. They, you know, Nick Swisher didn't hit well in the playoffs so far. But when you face the Yankees, you know, as an outfielder, do you play them differently because of their gap power and their ability to spray the ball around?
You're just on your toes. I mean, you're on your toes. Yeah, I mean, you go one through nine, and it's there's not an easy out in the lineup. So you look at it and, you know, you think, you know, it's going to be a long night. But I mean, with our pitching staff, you know, you have a lot of confidence in them, you know, getting it done. They got it done all season and, you know, they keep on doing a tremendous job.
When you talk about, the Yankees and their history, as a kid who grows up in Oregon, everybody knows Yankees Red Sox is a big deal. Were you surprised by almost the suffocating nature of the Red Sox Yankee series?
Well, like we mentioned earlier, growing back up on the West Coast, you know, I'm used to going to Mariners games and stuff like that. And, you watch the rivalry on TV, but until you're there, until you experience, until you're in the rivalry, you don't know what it's about. And, it's kind of a wake-up call for me just to see it, just to play in it, and it's fun. The fans get up for it. I mean, that's what makes that rivalry is the fans and the passion they have for that rivalry.
Yeah, as a Red Sox, you never want to be a fan of a Yankee, but the first time you played the Yankees, was there a Yankee in particular that you thought, whoa, I'm playing against him tonight?
I mean, there's a few, you know, Derek Jeter, Roger Clemens, you know, guys like that I grew up watching, you know, just on TV and, you know, idolizing and to be on the same field. And I mean, even when I walked in the Red Sox clubhouse for the first time, I mean, there's guys that, you know, you watch playing and, you emulate your swing of and, you know, things like that. So it was a great experience, you know, for me, to be a part of that rivalry and just, you know, kind of grow up fast, I guess you could say.
Fish is a Red Sox homer, Jacoby Ellsbury, in the Herd on ESPN Radio, who wrote, last year was your rookie year, was it not? And last year you broke in and nobody knew about you. You can really run, very good defensive player who can really run. You need to get on base for them to be successful. And then you come into the bigs. And is there a little animosity in the game for the Yankees who spend so much money? Tex, many thought, was going to be a Red Sox. Is there a little bit of animosity toward the Yankees because they do have the payroll they have?
You know, you definitely want to win when they're in town. For us, it's like, you know, playing 15 Super Bowls. That's just how the rivalry is. And yeah, I mean, teams want to go out there and win. I mean, they have a bullseye on their back.
Sure, their target.
Just like the Phillies this year. You know, they won the World Series, so they have the target on their back. But it's just one of those series where you get up to play. You know, no matter if you're tired, you're hurt, you're not feeling well, you get ready to go. Strap it on.
You know, when you look at the Phillies-Yankees, you just have a combination of a lot of not just great baseball players, big athletes. I mean, the Yankees are big. The infield, those guys look like they play Pac-10 football. I mean, they're Division I-looking football players. But similarly, so are the Phillies. A lot of gamers, a lot of big athletes. Is there a sense, the American League has dominated interleague play and dominated the All-Star game. Is there a sense from an American League team that it's just a higher brand of baseball than the National League?
You know, I'm not really sure. You know, obviously we've had success in interleague and you know, the All-Star game. But you know, I think we're confident. You know, New York's confident. I mean, we just have had the last couple of years. I mean, you look at Tampa, you look at, you know, Toronto, you look at the American League, and you know, we feel you know, we can compete with anybody. And I think it's just that confidence you know, that we bring into, you know, interleague and into the postseason. So, you know, that's the biggest thing for me.
CC Sabathia goes game one for the Yankees. He has been good all year, remarkable in the playoffs. When you face CC Sabathia, take us through it. What is it like?
Well, he's a left-handed power pitcher that very few in the game, so you really don't see anything like him. And in being a left-handed hitter, he throws that fastball in and away, and he has that that devastating slider. So he's tough. I mean, going in there, you know, you're going to have to grind out some at bats. You're trying to get his pitch count up. That's the biggest thing with him. You're trying to get that pitch count
Take
up.
Pitches.
You're trying to get him out of the game. If you can get into his bullpen, that's where you're going to have a lot of success, especially in the postseason. Try to get them out, get the bullpen involved. And, I mean, I think that's the way to beat, you know, any dominating pitcher, but someone like CC, you're going to need to get in their bullpen.
Their number two is, AJ Burnett, who, you know, throws in the mid 90s. Your thoughts on AJ Burnett and what it's like for the Phillies to face him?
If AJ's on top of his game, if he's locating his pitches, throwing his secondary pitches for strikes, he's going to be tough. He's going to be tough as well. So that'll be the key for him, is just locating his pitches, because you know his stuff's going to be there. You know he's going to, you know, come with that electric fastball, his sliders, curveball. So if he can locate, he's going to be just fine.
Andy Pettit, interestingly, if you face Pettit, you're a young guy. He is this storied veteran who's really sharp. Andy Pettit, who almost always seems to pitch better in a big spot, what's he like to face?
He's exactly right. He pitches big in big games. He's a veteran player that knows what he wants to do. Usually executes his pitches, and yeah, for him it's just basically the same thing, going out there and executing his pitches. You know he's going to compete. You know he's going to compete on the mound. You know he wants the ball. You know he wants to be out there in those big games. So it's going to be a fun series to watch. Yeah, you got two teams that can hit the ball very well, and you got some aces in the staff.
Mariano Rivera, Jacoby Ellsbury in studio here today with Taco Bell. They're giving away a free blackjack taco to everybody in America on Halloween. All you need to do, redeem this, head into a local Taco Bell restaurant after 6 local time on Halloween night. By the way, my daughter's going as a green M&M, and my son is going for Superman. I'm just throwing that out there. When Mariano Rivera gave up a run the other day, and the announcer for Fox said that's the first run he surrendered at Yankee Stadium in the playoffs in like 9 years. And I was just sitting there thinking, that's got to be a mistake. That's the most ridiculous thing. You probably don't have a ton of experience with Mariano Rivera, but you've got some. Is he different as a closer? How much of his success when you face him is pitching, and how much is confidence and legacy? I mean, when you face him, what do you feel?
You know, for me going out there, you know, I want to face someone that, you know, has had that success, you know, out there. And it's just that much more rewarding if you get a base hit off of them or something. But, yeah, for Mariano Rivera, he's been lights out, I mean, his whole career. And when he comes in the game, the New York fans, his teammates expect the game to be over. That's just how good he's been. I mean, you know, that's how good he's been throughout the playoffs and the regular season. So, to have someone like that at the back of your rotation, to shut down a ball game's, huge for them in the postseason.
Is there a certain Yankee pitcher, Jacoby, that you had success with? Was there anybody that you felt of that starting staff?
AJ Burnett for me. AJ, for some reason, I've seen him pretty well. I've been fortunate to get a couple pitches to drive, and I've had some success. So.
Well, when he doesn't spot his pitches, like you said, he does become pretty hittable. Like CC Sabathia, who has been unhittable in the postseason, big, powerful, towering left-hander. Does he hide the ball well? Do you see it from CC early?
See, that's the thing with him is, yeah, you don't normally see a guy of his size, left-handed, throwing as hard as he does. He hides the ball very well. He hides the ball very well. Comes out of his hand. Comes out. He has that late movement on his ball. So he, especially for a left-handed hitter, he makes it challenging for you.
Do you like the Yankees in the series?
I think whoever wins the first game in New York, I think is going to win the series. I say going all seven.
You know, why is the first game so big? You wouldn't think in baseball, in the NBA, obviously, but in baseball, that first game is so big. Why?
Well, especially in this series, I think with Cliff Lee on the mound and CeCe, two aces, two Cy Young candidates, I think whoever can get that first one will have momentum going to the other games, and you can ride that.
Yeah, plus if you beat New York in New York, it brings them down a peg, and they
right.
start gripping a little bit, and the fans are killing them, and the media's killing them. And Jacoby, it was great meeting you.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
The following is a Mike and Mike in the Morning exclusive.
The Major League Baseball Players Association presents...
Welcome to the Majors.
The Players' Choice Awards. And now, to present the category of National League Comeback Player, here's Mike and Mike.
All right, the nominees, and certainly all deserving... Aaron Boone of the Astros, Nick Johnson of the Marlins, but the winner who joins us here now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline from the St. Louis Cardinals is the terrific pitcher Chris Carpenter, who wins this award for the second time. He certainly knows a lot about coming back from injury. Chris, welcome to Mike and Mike, and congratulations.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You know, there's something I want to ask first about the injury. You know, having the Tommy John surgery is basically, for my sport, football, basically akin to a running back blowing out a knee. You know what I mean? And then getting it reconstructed and then coming back. And I always talk about the mental aspect of an injury, where you go in for that final exam with the doc, and the doc says, hey, you're good to go on that knee, cut, do whatever you got to do. But the running back gets out on the field, and there's that little bit of hesitation. Talk about that. I always wonder about that. The Tommy John surgery, and the doctor says, hey, you're good to go. Go out and let it go. How difficult is it mentally to just let it go?
You know, like you said, I have dealt with injury in the past, so this time it wasn't as hard, actually. Just knowing what to expect, that there's going to be soreness and that there's going to be some things going on in there that you're not used to just because you've had reconstructive surgery. But if you don't go out there and let it go, you'll never know if you're going to make it. So I went out and was able to push it and do everything I could to do the best I could to come back. And fortunately enough, with the support of my family and the organization and my teammates, I was able to go out and do the things I did this year.
It was an enormously successful year, obviously, for you and for your teammate, Adam Wainwright, and your team went into the postseason with such a head of steam, and then it ended so abruptly. So as you've had a couple of weeks now to sort of look back on it, how do you look back on the 2009 season, not so much for yourself, but for the St. Louis Cardinals?
Well, I mean, coming into the season, nobody knew what to expect. You had an unhealthy me, who you didn't know if you could count on me and what I was going to be able to do. But you know, we had a guy that had a really nice year last year, and Adam Wainwright, and we had Kyle Loesch who signed on, had a great year. I mean, we had a nice group of starting guys. Our team, you know, the core guys were still there with Ank and Luddy and Skip Schumacher moving to second base, was, you know, what was going to happen there, who did an unbelievable job. If anybody ever got to watch him play every day, and the things that he's done going from center field or outfield to second base was amazing. Albert, obviously, and Yachty, losing Troy right there at the beginning. So there was a lot of question marks of what was going to happen when we came into the season. We played our butt off the first half, gave our ownership a reason to go out and get some guys to add and help, and they did that, and then we took off from there. Unfortunately, you know, that's why you play them. You know, we got eight teams left there in the finals, and we were unable to do what we wanted to do. But you have to give credit to LA. They were a good team too.
Mike and Mike, Chris Carpenter. He's the National League Comeback Player Players' Choice Award. He'll get to designate $20,000 to charity. We'll get to that in a second. But quickly, the news yesterday, I assume you're happy that Tony La Russa has decided that he's coming back and adding Mark McGwire now on the bench. Now, you're a pitcher and he's a hitting coach, but you're aware, obviously, that's going to gain a lot of attention. What was your reaction to La Russa coming back and the addition of Mark McGwire?
Well, I'm obviously real excited about Tony. It's the only guy that I've had since I've been here, and he's an amazing manager. He's a prepared guy that all he cares about is winning. And if you go and play hard for him every single day, he's going to like you, and he's going to respect you, and that's what it's all about. I was really hoping he'd come back because he's the one that makes his team go. with the addition of Big Mac, it was surprising. You know, you've heard rumors about getting him to be a special assistant or one of those special coaches that come to spring training. But, I mean, with the things that he's done in his career and the knowledge that he has, I can't see how he can't help. So I'm looking forward to it and watching him work, but hopefully he can help me with my hitting a little bit too.
Chris Carpenter is with us here winning the Players' Choice Award, and the Players' Choice Award winners will designate charities to receive grants totaling $260,000 from the Major League Baseball Players Trust. You will get to donate $20,000 to the charity of your choosing. Have you decided who you're going to give it to yet?
Yeah, I give it to a charity back home in New Hampshire that me and my wife deal with, and it's called CHAD. It's Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and specifically it's called Kristen's Gift. It's children's cancer and things like that, and it's a great charity up there. We try to give back to some things back home, and this one is super special to both of us. We've been a part of it for a long time. I've won a few of these awards, and every award that I've won, I've donated to them, and it's a great charity to be a part of. If you ever have an opportunity to read about it or see what it's about, it's called KristensGift.org, and it's an amazing story, an amazing charity to be a part of.
Well, good for you. And that's obviously the best part of all of this. Congratulations, Chris. We appreciate the time today. Best of luck. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
And I think it's going to be a really interesting World Series. I said this before, is that one of the reasons I prefer the American League to the National League, you have higher payroll teams, and you just have more great athletes. But I do think the Philadelphia Phillies look and play like an American League team. And I think it makes for a very interesting World Series. You know, I thought the Angels matched up pretty well with the Yankees. But the thing about, and you have to remember this, the Angels have a lot of young players. The Philadelphia Phillies have a lot of 29, 30, 31 year old guys. Raul Ibanez, mid to late 30s. Pedro Martinez, I think, is now 40, 41. You've got a lot of veteran players who have been here before. They're not impressed with the stage. It's not a daunting atmosphere. The Phillies will come out, big name stars, veteran players, been here before, won a World Series. They won't back down at all from the Yankees. I think it's a great World Series. Bobby Valentine joining us. All right, Bobby, do guys manage differently in the postseason than the regular season?
I don't think you manage any differently, and you just might make a move or two more than you would in a regular season. That doesn't mean it's different. It means that you're doing everything you can to win that particular game. During the regular season, there are moves that you'll make to win a game down the road, a week from now, 2 weeks from now, build someone's confidence, let someone feel good about themselves. But the feel-good time is all over once you get to the postseason. It's must-win time. So the prepared manager might look like he's doing more than he did before, but he's doing exactly what he did before. He's just using all of his pieces.
What do you do in the postseason, Bobby, if you're the Yankees and you have a kid like Jabba who has been so hot and so cold and now you're in a World Series? Are you going to use him in a crisis situation? I mean, what do you make with guys who maybe struggled and scrapped the last couple of days?
Well, for sure. The first time you meet him isn't when you call him in from the bullpen. You're talking with this guy in practice in the clubhouse. You're seeing him in the food room. And you're getting a beat on his pulse. You're trying to figure out exactly what it is you have at this time of the year. And once you read those tea leaves, then you decide to put him in that crucial situation or not.
How do you think the Phillies match up with the Yankees?
Oh, I think offensively they match up very well. I think they're a gritty team. You know, last time they met up, it was the Whiz Kids of Philly. Now it's the Biz Kids of Philly. These guys just mean business. Everyone talks about them loving to play and playing to the last out, and that's everything that I've seen. So I think it's a good matchup everywhere except for in the middle of the diamond, and the Yankees have a little nod when you get 1-2-3 compared to Philly's 1-2-3.
The Yankees were first, the Phillies second in Major League Baseball in home runs in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. What does that tell you about the Yankees and Phillies, both teams, tons of power late in games?
it tells me they play in home run favorable ballparks, where if you do happen to catch one and put it in the air, it has a chance of becoming a four base hit. And, you know, you get into some of those spacious ballparks, you're not going to win games with home runs late in the game, and you build your team around that.
You know, you've managed in New York before. What kind of pressure do you feel Joe Girardi feels right now?
Well, it depends on what Joe puts on himself. You know, desire is the thing that creates pressure, and I think Joe enjoys what he's doing. I think he gets into the moment. He's shown me that he's not afraid to put his best foot forward and take a chance, and that means he's not afraid of the consequences, and he's not worried about the post-game interview or even winning the trophy. What he's concerned with is the competition, and people who are concerned with competition really have very little pressure.
Bobby Valentine joining us. It's the Herd on ESPN Radio. How surprised were you at A-Rod's playoff performance so far, which has been amazing?
Well, to say that you're surprised at having the best players that I've ever seen played like the best player in the series would be kind of a dumb statement by me, but because he did not have the track record coming in, I think that all I can say is it's about time. But, you know, the amazing thing about A-Rod, getting the two home runs the last day of the season, so he gets his 30 home runs and 100 RBIs for consecutive seasons, I know that that's something that he wanted and that he really desired, if you will. When you're looking at the fact that he's, you know, been not only consistent, not only has he walked and been on base with a .537 on base percentage, but he's hit the crucial home runs that put his team ahead or tie in crucial parts of the game, I think you're seeing a guy who, once again, is in the moment and is not worried about the MVP trophy, but is concerned at the competition at hand.
Do the Phillies have any big advantage over the Yankees?
No, I don't think anyone has an advantage. I think that this is going to be a situation that the breaks are going to determine who wins at the end of the game. But from 1 through 9 innings, there's going to be wonderful individual competitions, and I even think wonderful plays. You know, the outfield defense of both teams has, in my opinion, been has left a little to be desired. So there might be a player or two that decides these games created in the outfield.
Yeah. Hey, Bobby, good luck to you via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Bobby Valentine. Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Dylan. See ya.
And Reggie Bush right now is at a party being thrown for him in New Orleans by Red Bull. Reason Red Bull is throwing him a party is because he's on the cover of the October issue of the Red Bulletin. It's a global lifestyle sports magazine across the globe, and Reggie Bush is on the front cover. Plenty of great stuff about his life. He joins us now via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline to help us break down the game and what he's got to say in this latest issue of the Red Bulletin. Reggie, first thing I got to say is congratulations on the win yesterday against the Dolphins. They kind of had your number there for a little while, didn't they?
You're absolutely right. They did have our number. And, you know, it was a tough game, a hard fight game, a game where we had to play a full 60 minutes, four quarters. And, you know, they gave us a run for our money. And, you know, hats off to them for the game plan that they came out with that had us down and almost out of the game. And, you know, fortunately for us, we have a great group of guys who have character and resilience and stay focused. And, you know, never lost sight of our goal, which was to come out of that game with a win.
Now, part of your second half comeback, you guys put 36 points on the board. I want you to tell me the truth. Who got higher, you getting into the end zone for your touchdown or Breeze when he spiked the ball over the goalpost?
Well, I definitely jumped farther. I'm not sure who got higher. But, you know, it was great, I think, to see Drew run over there and dunk the ball on the goalpost. I loved it. You know, I think it's great. And, you know, he's a competitor, man, and you know, he's a fighter. And, you know, he had, I mean, you know, 3 turnovers in that game yesterday, and we just continued to fight. And we had his back, and, you know, he continued to fight. And, you know, he had 2 touchdowns, 2 quarterback sneak touchdowns, and you know, they're obviously key for us. And, you know, I told him after the game, I told him he had pretty decent hops for a white guy.
Yeah, I didn't think he could get that high. I said, oh my goodness, he's going to go up and break his wrist right. up on the crossbar.
And get hung and then fall back. Right.
Hey, what's been with you guys this year? You've always been a team that can put a lot of points on the board, but here you are undefeated. Yesterday was the first time you ever trailed in a game. You came back and proved any other doubters wrong. Best team in football. What's been the difference?
I think just the character. I think the commitment that everybody's had this off season. I think it's all started off season. You know, the commitment that we've had to just being a tough team and not being a finesse team, being a team that can win in all phases. And I think that's what you're seeing this year, is that, we've been able to score points on offense, on defense, special teams. And, we're just playing complete, fundamentally sound football. And I think that's the key to our success right now, And you saw yesterday in the game, we were in a situation where a lot of teams would have tanked at that point, down 21 points. And we stayed in it. We fought through it. We weathered the storm. And we came out with a big win.
Saints running back Reggie Bush is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our guests like Reggie all appear via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Reggie, you're on the cover of a new magazine called The Red Bulletin, which is pretty interesting because it's not just a sports magazine, but it's interactive. Right. You can get online and get all kinds of video and different content. It's kind of like one of the new ways. It's a pretty interesting venture you're here on the front page of.
It is, and I think it's a great opportunity for people just to see what kind of life is like, for me. On a daily basis, and just kind of seeing my home and what I do, and just kind of how I live my life, here in New Orleans, which is a great place, and a place that I love to death, and so like I said, I think it's just a great opportunity for people to see what life is like, in a day in life, with me and NFL.
Now, one of the things you said in the article is about how you've done some great things in the NFL here and there, but not on a consistent level. You got your sights set on this year. How come it's been a bit of a stop and go for you?
Well, I think obviously, first, I've been injured the last 2 years, which has been, anytime you're injured, you're not on the field, you're not producing. And, then when you come back from those injuries, you have to take it slow. You can't just run out there and pound it out like you want to and like the fans want you to because, it's an injury and you got to get your body and whatever that injured area is back used to, taking that pounding. And I think, that's been the toughest part is just being patient. But fortunately enough for me, I'm still young and, we're playing great right now. And, it's going to happen, at some point in time. It's going to happen. And, I'm going to, do all the things that I expect myself to do and to be. And, but it's just about being patient right now and staying focused and just believing in myself that it is going to happen one day. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's not about just me though. It's about our team and it's about, the guys on that football field. It's not about my personal goals, because the ultimate goal is to win the Super Bowl. So, I can't be selfish and put my personal goals first and expect to still be able to, be that team player, that team leader.
Is that something that you think about consciously a lot as you go forward and say, okay, maybe this game I didn't have the big runs that I'm expected to and I got to put that all in perspective?
I mean, the thing is, this is the NFL. I mean, it's not as easy as, people think. It's not like playing college football, I guarantee you that. Because from each, this is a story I tell a lot of people. From each college team, every year, you may have 1 to 3 players that make it to the NFL. And, that's just the way it is. That's the way this business is. It's a tough league to play in. And, so when you have some struggles, at first, and when you have to overcome adversity, it's appreciated when you do get to that high level because of what you had to go through to get there.
Well, some of the spoils, as I'm looking through the magazine in your article, they show a picture of your shoe closet. How many pairs of sneakers do you have?
I don't even know. I don't have at least, I would say, over 60.
If I have more than 3 pairs, my wife tells me, what do you need a pair of sneakers for? So this is going to actually help me maybe get a 4th pair sometime soon.
You know what? Collecting shoes is a hobby of mine. I think it's that way because when I was young, I didn't come from money. I didn't have a lot of money. So, I've always been a shoe fanatic. I never had the money to buy all the shoes and stuff that I wanted to. So now that I have that opportunity to do that now, I think that's one of my hobbies and my ventures is just to, buy lots of shoes, even if I don't wear them.
Hey, what do you make your alma mater? USC is the highest-ranked one-loss team in the BCS. They had that one loss, that hiccup that seems to happen to the Trojans. They lose a game they shouldn't the last couple of years, but here they are right in the thick of things.
You know what? I am. I'm excited. And I'm having fun with the season that they're having right now. Like you said, they had that one hiccup, that one loss, and which was a tough loss. But you know, they're still in it, and they still control their own destiny. And I think as long as they continue to win out, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, because every year, you know, there's always, you know, the top teams always end up losing. And I think, you know, in these past 2 years, you know, it's been so many exchanges in the top, you know, five teams as to, you know, the losing games. You just never know. So, you know, even if you lose one game, you know, you still got to, you know, stay focused and just, you know, hope that, you know, everything plays itself out.
Now, you talk about the fans in the NFL here and talk about how great fans you guys have in New Orleans, and certainly it's one of the most intimidating places to play. You hear players say all the time, I don't like playing in there. You don't like playing in Oakland, which is nothing new. Nobody really likes playing in Oakland because you say the fans there are the worst there than anywhere.
Oh, man, the fans, I mean, just some of the things that come out of their mouths, it's like you can't believe it. You can't believe it's like you're about to play a game with these people right here behind you. But, you know, I think it's great. You know, it brings out the competitive nature in most athletes, you know, when you play environments like that. But, you know, Oakland is tough to play in a different way because the fans are so nasty. I think it's tough to play in New Orleans because of the way that we play and because the fans are so loud. So there's different reasons why I think stadiums are tough to play in. But, you know, Oakland is known as one of those just crazy environments, crazy fans.
Anybody ever, whether it's Oakland or somewhere else, heckle you and you have to say, you know, boy, that was a pretty good one?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. When we were in Oakland, as a matter of fact, I mean, the fans were saying some of the funniest things that, you know, just had us just cracking up laughing, you know, on the sidelines. I remember in the pregame when we were warming up, if you remember back Jim Mora when he had that famous press conference and he was, you know, going on and he started talking about playoffs and he kept saying playoffs. It was about five or six fans. They were all just, you know, kind of saying that and it just had us cracking up laughing. So it's good times and, you know, sometimes you do get some of those fans who say things that are so funny that you just can't ignore and you have to laugh about it.
He's Saints running back Reggie Bush on the cover of the Red Bulletin. The website is www.redbulletin.com. Very interesting magazine, not only about reading about Reggie Bush, but seeing about his life and what it's like to play in the National Football League on the best team right now, the New Orleans Saints. Reggie, appreciate your time. Best of luck. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
One of our regulars with us, Pete Futak, our insider with collegefootballnews.com. Pete, we'll get to Lane Kiffin and a guy who improved his draft stock immensely this weekend in a couple of seconds. But let's take a look at the latest BCS poll here as we see some of the voters making changes possibly in what they voted to the top three, the top four, the top ten. Did we see voters do something, for example, like having Boise State too high week one so we needed to change what we saw to make it right in the poll for week two?
No, because the human polls didn't really change up that much. What the thing to remember is, and it's a weekly thing, is don't get too hung up by the wild fluctuations because the computers, depending on the formula, takes into account the entire season, which means the teams that haven't even played yet for some of these teams are taken into account with some of these formulas. So it's you have to kind of wait for the whole season to play out. And again, the thing to look at are the human polls. Whatever the human polls are, that's pretty much what it's going to be when all is said and done. With that said, though, the humongous winner this week were Iowa and TCU. Iowa, because now they're in range. Now if they are number one according to the computer polls, and it's only going to get better because they're going to play Ohio State. So if Iowa is now in a position to be in the national championship discussion, if Texas falters or if something happens to the SEC teams, also in a great position now is TCU because they jumped ahead of Boise State, and Boise State plays no one left. They have Nevada. That's a pretty tough game, but that's it for them, while Utah is the big one for TCU, and plus the Mountain West is obviously better. So, you know, TCU, if it wins out, it'll get that automatic spot into the BCS. And the other humongous winner here is USC. They are now in a perfect position to be that one-loss team to be in the argument because where they're at number five, if they went out, especially with this, if they can beat Oregon at Oregon this week, they're not going to slip or go down from there.
Pete, what about Cincinnati? We saw them, no Tony Pike. They had no problem with Louisville on Saturday, 41-10. But it kind of lines up for them as well. They got West Virginia coming up, and West Virginia's winning well, ranked number 21. Then they finish at Pittsburgh. Could it line up for Cincinnati to leapfrog some teams to get up there if you
they
see the
will,
top
yeah,
teams?
If if they keep winning, then they'll just move up because of the human polls. And we made the call a few weeks ago. We put in our bowl projection Cincinnati in the national championship because, of their schedule and how it looked to play out and everything like that. But, we backed off on that. Now that it looks like Texas has become a world beater and they look like they're going to be in because the Big 12 is awful and the SEC champion is almost a guaranteed lock to be in this thing. But Cincinnati can certainly move back in this. They can certainly get close. But there might be a ceiling on what they can do. I think you'd put a one-loss SEC champion in ahead of undefeated Cincinnati, but that's about it.
Our insider with collegefootballnews.com, Pete Futak, is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our guests like Pete all appear via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Now, Pete, we know about the teams that control their own destiny. We talk about, if you need teams that falter. Florida, Alabama, Texas all control their fate as they go. If they keep winning, two of those teams will play for the national title with Florida, Alabama playing each other in the SEC championship game. But does LSU control their own destiny?
Yeah,
they sit there at number nine, but they control their own destiny as well.
Yeah, I was just about to throw that one out there, too. And you're saying that they kind of do, because let's say they run the table. They went at Alabama. They went at Ole Miss, which I don't think is going to happen. I think they're probably going to lose both of them. They're just not that good. But let's say they do. Let's say they run through the rest of the schedule, and all of a sudden they're 11-1, and they get a rematch against Florida for the SEC championship, and they win that game. I think then you kind of cancel out the first loss, and I think they get an automatic spot in the national title no matter what. So absolutely, they're the one other team out there that I think can control its own destiny. Everyone else needs a lot of help outside of Texas and obviously Florida and Alabama.
Hey, Pete, let's talk about Alabama for a second as they escape on Saturday against Tennessee when Tennessee's Daniel Lincoln misses a field goal. I can't help but think that Lane Kiffin mismanaged the game and settled for that field goal, because they get down inside of a minute. They have plenty of time to move down in from a 43, 44-yard field goal, considering Lincoln had already had a kick block in the fourth quarter, and he was short from 47 yards earlier in the game, and yet they still seemed okay with, we're going to run the ball once or twice, once here, and then we're going to let it click all the way down and kill the clock. And I thought, this is too much to ask. This is suddenly saying, I don't have confidence we can get down the field anymore. I don't think we can get further into field goal range. And I'm content with a 44, 45 yarder to win, which was anything but certain.
Yeah, it's obviously you can go that way and rip on them. I questioned it as well. But on the flip side of it is, you've got Jonathan Crompton at quarterback, who's played extremely well over the last few weeks. And, for all the faults that Lane Kiffin might have, he has helped make Jonathan Crompton into an improved quarterback. And you look across the college football landscape at other coaching staffs, like at UCLA, for example, Steve Spurrier at South Carolina last year. I always fault the coaches when the quarterbacks aren't playing better over the course of a season. And Crompton is improving. However, he is prone to throwing interceptions, and Alabama does have the best defense in the country. If they are not the best, they're in the top three, and they are great at making big plays at the right time. And so I think then the flip side of that is, let's say they did try to push the ball a little bit more. With that aggressive defense, with that front line, there's no way they're getting anything with the running game. And if Crompton throws a pick, I think we're screaming the other way, saying, what are you doing, letting a guy like Crompton, who's noted for throwing bad interceptions at the worst times, for making that big mistake. But at some point, going to the larger picture here, when are we going to stop making excuses for Florida and Alabama? I mean, they're playing well, but has the SEC been that great? I don't think so. And, these two are being just assumed to be that the winner of that game, these two play for the SEC championship, is going to go to the national title game. But, at some point, when do we start saying, they're just not that good? I mean, then we at least need to look at teams like Iowa and Cincinnati as teams that deserve to be in that discussion every bit as much as the Gators and the Tide do.
Yeah, I look at Florida in that a little bit more than Alabama. Alabama had this game, I felt, okay, this was their one eye-opener, but Florida's had a couple of games this year. We thought they were going to win big. They didn't. They struggled. They don't seem to me to be a team like we're waiting for them to hit their stride. Florida seems to me, at this point, I think we know them pretty well, this is the Gator team you're going to get. They're going to struggle, and it's just week to week. Can we keep it going one more week? Can we escape with a win one more week? Because as long as we win, we're going to stay there. We're going to stay there. But to me, Florida is a team that's ripe for a loss somewhere along the line.
Oh, yeah, and the Tide struggled a little bit against Kentucky for a while, too, there a couple weeks ago. But what they're doing is, they're playing Ohio State football. And both teams are relying on their defense, their running game, and hoping that their quarterback doesn't screw things up. And they just say, on talent alone, we're just going to show up in the stadium and beat 95 of the teams in America just by our sheer athleticism and skill. And then they're going to hope that they have just enough to not mess things up and, you know, let the formula work and let their defense come through when needed.
All right, Pete, if we talk about stock being down a little bit on the SEC, let's talk about stock up here. And is there any player in college football that didn't improve their draft stock on Saturday more than C.J. Spiller? 90-yard kickoff return for a touchdown, 56-yard touchdown catch. He had over 300 all-purpose yards. He's got plenty of long touchdowns this season.
Yeah, and he's got the life-size poster in my office to prove it in the SID's promotional tour they got. So, you're right. But see, everybody already knows about him. Everybody already loved him. I mean, all the pro scouts consider him a first-round draft pick to be sure, just on sheer talent. His question mark is durability. And if you can tell the pro scouts that, we can guarantee that you are going to get 14 games a year out of this guy, he's probably a top 15 overall pick. He was a first-round to begin with, and if he can answer the durability questions, he's definitely a top 20, top 15 pick. Remember, it only takes one team to fall in love with you and take you in the first round. So, you're right. His stock did go up, but it was already high to begin with.
He's our insider with collegefootballnews.com, Pete Futek. Pete, appreciate you telling us on All Night. We'll talk to you next week.
No problem. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. For more of the best that ESPN Radio has to offer, don't forget to listen online every day to shows like Mike and Mike in the Morning, The Herd, and The Scott Van Pelt Show, all available at ESPNRadio.com.